Roger, Skibbon is reporting. Our next news as it happens. Next scheduled news at 4:30 with Lester Smith. Now, at 4:15, let's clear the deck and make way for Bob and Ray.
Oh, real feeling of spring here today.
Just throw open the windows to let some of that beautiful spring air come into the studio.
I think we should explain that the window we threw open is not the picture window. That is stationary in its position.
Can't throw that open. That's really stuck in there pretty good.
These are the windows in the dormers along the roof, the edge of the roof here at WOR Radio.
A picturesque little window. Thank you. Was that Roger Skibbon?
Yes.
Doing all that talking for 15 minutes?
Introducing the very suave and debonair Bob and Ray. Will be here until 7 o'clock this Friday afternoon.
What kind of birds are those?
I don't know.
What kind of birds are those?
I guess they were sparrows.
I haven't seen a robin yet either. Have you this
no,
year?
Well, I don't see them here in town.
No, I guess you wouldn't. Well, we're happy to say that we have a truly famous celebrity here at the microphones with us now. In fact, I suppose the name Fabian Glutnick has become a household term throughout, I guess, the entire civilized world. His book, I'm holding it up now to camera too, How to Sell the Product by Selling Yourself, has sold millions and millions of copies. Now, do you have any idea just how many millions, Mr. Glutnick?
Well,
I know that the camera, please.
The book has been translated into 31 languages now, and at last count, the sales totaled right around 108 million.
That's truly amazing. And, of course, the book has given rise to the whole Glutnick system of personality improvement.
That's right. There's a Glutnick School of Personality Development in almost every major city now. We're constantly taking in lawyers, doctors, and other men in mundane occupations and turning them into crackerjack salesmen.
And what's that term you use to describe the factor that's the key to the whole thing?
You're probably referring to extrovert thinking. That's the process of forgetting your own personal interests and concentrating on the interests of your client completely. It's a system that invariably succeeds in sales work. I could give you a little demonstration of it right here if you'd like.
Sure, that'd be wonderful.
All right. Now, let's assume I'm an insurance salesman and you're the prospect. I'll go out and come in again.
All right, but I warn you now, I'm known for my sales resistance.
Well, 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 you must be the Ray Golding.
Yes, but whatever you're selling, I don't think I want any.
I'm not here on business, Mr. Golding. I was calling on a client upstairs, and we got to talking about onion soup recipes, and this fella told me if I really wanted to know how to make onion soup, I ought to see Ray Golding. He said you have a whole album full of onion soup recipes.
Well, I do, but gee, I never thought anybody would be interested in them.
I can see that modesty is one of your traits, Mr. Golding.
Well,
incidentally, I just noticed that picture up on the wall there, the one of you holding a croquet mallet. That's a men's game, all right.
Well, I used to be pretty good at it. I won a club championship once up in Darien, but, oh, gosh, that was a good many years ago.
Well, it may have been some years ago, but they're still talking about it.
Oh, who is?
Over at the Racquet Croquet Club.
Yeah?
I had lunch there one day last week, and the name Ray Golding was on everybody's lips.
Is that right? Well, I didn't know anybody remembered.
I overheard one of the instructors telling a pupil that if he practiced hard enough, he might develop into another Ray Golding.
Holy smoke, really? That's wonderful.
Well, I got to be running along. Got to get home early so I can tell the wife and kids I met the Ray Golding.
Wait a minute, Mr. Glutnick. I want to sign up for that policy.
I haven't even told you I sell insurance yet. I don't get around to that until the second call.
I want the biggest annuity you've got. The papers must be in your briefcase somewhere. Here, I'll use my own pen.
Mr. Golding, let go of my coat. This was only a demonstration.
I need a policy for my wife, too. Please, now, you got to sell me one.
Getting down on your knees won't help. You got to understand I don't really sell insurance. This is just a demonstration.
Whatever you're selling, man, I want 10 of them.
I got to get to another engagement now. Goodbye.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. While Harry and Greg look for the American consulate at one side of Milan, Calvin and Pop are searching in an opposite direction. And we join them now as they stand at the corner of Via Galano and Via Genice. And we hear Calvin say,
"Yeah, that's the thing. It goes through my mind morning, noon, and night. rack and pinion steering. What is rack and pinion steering?
Well, try to get some of your deja vu back. So does this building look like the consulate looked to when you were here before, you think?
It looks a little like it. Yeah, I think this would be it.
No sign or anything, or at least I can't read it. There is a sign there. Can you make that out, what that says?
See, I don't know what... it's in Italian. I don't...
It doesn't say consolati or anything like that, does it?
Well, I think if it was the American consulate, it would say consulate, you know?
Oh, in English, I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Sure. Maybe we'll have it in both languages. Kind of a deja vu thing.
Yeah, maybe this is the Italian entrance to the American consulate. That could be.
Yeah.
You know, like a family entrance?
Sure,
so
sure.
Let's go in anyway. Maybe we'll have some luck in getting some help for finding Barry. I wonder how Greg and Harry are doing at their side of town.
I have no idea.
Hey, this is a beautiful place.
Well, they're all kind of busy. This must be the recreation room of the concert.
Well, if it is, everybody who works here must be taking recreation. Look,
they're all like Minnesota fats.
Yeah.
They're all playing pool, and pretty good, too.
Hey, there's a roulette wheel over there.
Funny concert, isn't it?
Yeah, I've never been in one before. Maybe they're all like this. How can we
Senor?
Tell?
Senor! Senor! There's something about our appearance that makes these people bust out laughing. Yeah, right.
He's trying to tell you something, Calvin, I think.
I think he probably wants us to play a little pool. You know, it's one of my better games, you know. I don't think you realize that.
No, I didn't know you were an expert at pool.
Yes, sir. It's one of my accomplishments. I can really wipe out a table in no time.
Well, get in the game if you want. I'm not very good at
it. Rotation is my big game.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Wish we could find somebody we could talk to and find out if they'll help us find Barry. Signori. Oh, signori.
Yes.
It's all the Italian I know.
Nothing in here about rack and pinion steering that I can see.
Pasta, signori?
Yes.
See, we're looking for Mary Backstage, who's been missing for a number of days now.
Hey, you there with the full cue. We want your attention.
Same reaction that little kid had yesterday, isn't it? And so Calvin and Pop appear to have stumbled into the wrong establishment. They look for help in finding Mary. And you ought to be here on Monday when we'll join Greg and Harry and we'll hear Greg say...
Lei un uomo affari, escusanali, senor.
That's Monday in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
Alan, Mr. Gilmore, would you come over here, please? We were very happy today when we arrived here to find the commander of the trophy train waiting for us. I guess the spring weather brought you out, huh?
No, I came in by Penn Central.
This nice warm weather kind
of... Oh, it got me thinking, and I want to know what your plans were. I forget where the train is.
I think it's in Cape Charles, Virginia.
Oh, no.
No?
No, that was a year ago.
Oh, it didn't go that far south.
No. I don't know. I have any idea where it is. And I was wondering if you'd know.
Well, someone in our organization does, certainly.
Because when it goes up for the winter, my responsibility ceases at that time.
I know that.
So I don't know where it is or have any idea.
I tell you, over the weekend, we've got a couple of business meetings planned with the staff to block out next week's shows and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And we'll pin whoever's in charge of that to the wall and see if he can...
Funny how that has slipped my mind. I knew, of course, where they were taking it for the winter.
Yeah.
But I've been busy doing my other chores and work.
Well, it's been a matter of months now since we saw you or the train.
Yeah.
So check in on Monday, will you? We'll probably know where it is.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Spring is here. And we suggest you hurry down to Corvette's for a spring picnic of store-wide savings. Save on Corvette's tennis balls, 3 for $1.77, a solid-state black-and-white TV, $69.99, men's coordinated jeans, $11.99 for the jacket, $8.99 slacks, a Kodak trim light camera, $17.77, women's print and gauze shirts, only $4.99 at Corvette's, 5 quarts of motor oil, $2.99,
and Spring Meadow Butterfly Sheets, 2 for $6. All at Corbett's, the family store.
Hey, very good. This is Bob and Ray. Bob over there, Ray over here at the big W-shaped desk, here with you each day at the WOR Radio, the talk of New York. It's 4:30 now, and here with the news, Lester Smith. Now, the makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the men of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we drive north into the Hollywood Hills. Sometimes we go another direction. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, I just pulled over to the curb and stopped on a side street when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said...
Excuse me, Sam. I guess I stayed too late at the retirement party for Dawson last night.
Yeah, kind of sleepy myself, Ralph R. Jr. That's why I pulled over to the curb here. I thought maybe I could curl up in the back seat and catch a little nap while things are quiet.
Well, I guess a nap's okay, Sam, but I don't think you ought to curl up in the back seat. You know, when citizens go by and see an officer curled up in the back seat, they wonder.
Yeah, well, I've got to curl up in the back seat, Ralph R. Jr. I can never sleep sitting up.
Oh, I'll bet you could if you tried, Sam. Just count sheep or picture clouds rolling by. He'll doze off in no time. I'd bet on it.
No, I've tried all those things. They never work. I just can't sleep sitting up. I'll have to climb in the back seat and curl up.
I don't think you ought to, Sam. You know how some people feel about cops anyway. If they see an officer curled up in the back seat, they'll wonder.
Yeah, but I still can't sleep sitting up.
Calling car 119, car 119. Relieve car 28 on stakeout duty at 4431 South Olympic. That's a stakeout at 4431 South Olympic.
4431 South Olympic, huh?
That's us, Sam. Let's roll.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to. I sure hate drawing stakeout duty when I'm this sleepy, though. We could wind up sitting there in the dark for hours.
I get the picture, Sam, and I'd sure hate to doze off just when the action begins. It'd be awful hard to explain to the sergeant.
I gotta go along with you on that, Ralph R. Jr. Sometimes the sergeant comes around to inspect officers on stakeout, too. Sure hate to think what'll happen if he finds us asleep.
I get the picture, Sam. If the sergeant comes around and sees two officers asleep in a squad car, he'll wonder.
I gotta go along with you there. Sure hate drawing stakeout duty when we're both this sleepy.
I got a thought, Sam. Suppose I catch 40 winks while you handle the stakeout, then I'll take over, and you can curl up in the back seat for a nap.
Sounds like it might work, Ralph R. Jr. At least there's no risk of having the sergeant catch us both asleep.
That's the picture I got, Sam. But there's still one problem. If any citizen goes by and sees an officer curl up in the back seat, they'll wonder, you know.
Yeah, but it'll only be one officer at a time. That's something.
Car 119, car 119. Disregard that call to relieve car 28 on stakeout at 4431 South Olympic. The suspect under surveillance has now left the building. He's been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
While we're waiting to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a valuable tip from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Friends, we all know that the income tax deadline is rapidly approaching, but did you realize that flypaper may be a deductible item on your return? Well, it's true. If your physician has prescribed flypaper to keep insects off your body or those of a dependent, then you can deduct the cost. And the same is true if you're self-employed and have to buy flypaper in order to conduct your business. So keep taxes down while you're keeping bugs away by buying and deducting genuine Einbinder flypaper, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations.
The suspect apprehended leaving that building on South Olympic was found guilty of leaving a building under suspicious circumstances. This crime is punishable in the state of California by a fine of not less than $2 or more than $5.
So another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night. Now the Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who battles misfortune with the only weapon at her disposal, fear. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is making a new velvet cover for her pincushion in the downstairs sewing room. It's mid-afternoon, and Sergeant Gernback, the director of Army Recruiting in the village, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you. I'm recruiting Sergeant Gernback. I hope I didn't call you away from the office just as you had a hot prospect ready to sign on the dotted line.
No, not at all, Miss Bessinger. In fact, we don't get any actual enlistments here in the village. I have to send all the recruits over to the county seat for their physicals before they're allowed to sign up.
Well, I think that's nice for the boys. It gives them a chance to see the world, even if they flunk out. And I do think travel is broadening for a young person.
Well, I don't know that a bus ride over to the county seat gives the boys much of an idea how the rest of the world lives, but we have to do it that way because there's no army doctor stationed in the village here.
I know, and I've often thought that that was a terrible shame. I remember when one of the Waterman boys came down with a tonsil problem while he was home on leave from the service, and none of our civilian doctors knew what to do for him because they'd never treated a soldier. So he just had to lie there suffering.
Well, I don't quite understand that. A soldier's tonsils are no different from anyone else's.
Well, I never quite understood the problem myself, but I don't know. There are just so many things going on around here lately that I don't understand.
Yes, I've heard that about you, Miss Bessinger.
Well, I think it all started when Warren Harding got mixed up in the Teapot Dome scandal. I just couldn't believe that a fine family man like that would get involved with a bunch of crooks.
Well, I've read where the whole country felt that way at the time.
Yes, I suppose that's true. And President Harding always looked so nice in his golf knickers, too. Did you ever notice how trustworthy he seemed to be when he had his picture taken wearing golf knickers?
No, ma'am, I don't believe I've ever seen a picture of Warren Harding in golf knickers. But I don't imagine that's what you call me over here to talk about anyway.
No, you're just as right as you can be about that. I'm recruiting Sergeant Gernback. I've really been in a complete snit all day. It wasn't until this morning that I found last night's newspaper in the shrubbery where the boy threw it. And now that I've read the terrible news, I just don't know what to do about it.
Well, I don't recall if the news in last night's paper was any more terrible than usual, Miss Bessinger. What was it that got you so upset?
Well, it's all over the front page. I don't see how you could have missed it. Look at this. Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor. It looks as if we're in the war for sure now, and I'm just wondering which branch of the women's service you'll let me sign up for that won't require me to do any heavy lifting.
Well, I don't think you need to sign up for anything, Miss Bessinger. This isn't yesterday's paper you got. It's December 7th, 1941. And the war's all over now. We won it.
Oh, my stars. That does come as good news. I guess I should have suspected that that was an old newspaper when I had to dig through piles of dead leaves of the shrubbery to get at it.
Yes.
But I was so shocked by the headline that I didn't notice the date. Goodness sakes. Knowing I won't have to sign up for the duration does lift a great burden from my shoulders. I almost feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Well, can it be that winning World War II may at last enable Edna to find true happiness? Or will it only cause further heartbreak when she realizes that her great opportunity to meet servicemen at the USO is gone forever? Join us for our next episode when Edna may apply for the wartime ration books she was entitled to receive in the gathering dusk.
It's the top stories. New Jersey's Dr. X gets his hospital privileges restored in Jersey City. Financial Control Board is mulling the proposed city budget cuts. And hundreds protest planned hospital closings in New York City. Once again, in partly cloudy mid-Manhattan, it's 65 degrees. And that, friends, is the 5 o'clock rush hour report. This is John Scott. Next news as it happens, next scheduled news at 5:30 over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. Now more Bob and more Ray and more Radio New York over more WOR New York.
And today we've had our scouts searching through the human debris at New York's railroad and bus terminals. We always like to give the most pathetic people we can find a chance to tell their tragic stories here over the air to spruce up other people's spirits. And then, of course, our generous Bob and Ray organization is always standing by to lend a helping hand. So, Bob, to begin our charitable activities for today, suppose you let that poor wretch there beside you tell his story.
I'll be happy to, Ray. This unfortunate soul is Mr. Stanley Briscoe of Warren, Pennsylvania. Mr. Briscoe, I understand you're a scoutmaster and that you're here in New York trying to help one of your scouts earn a merit badge.
Well, no, that's not quite right. I'm a Boy Scout myself, and I'm trying to earn a merit badge in mountain climbing.
Well, aren't you just a little bit too old to be a Boy Scout, sir?
Well, I'm 46, so I guess that makes me a little older than the average, but I'm determined I'm going to stay active in the troop until I become an Eagle Scout. And it seems to take me a lot longer than the other kids to earn every merit badge. I guess that's why they finally agreed to let me come to New York here to win the one I need in mountain climbing.
Well, I'm sure they had your best interests at heart, sir, but there aren't any mountains here in the city to climb.
Well, I know, but they made an exception in my case because of my advanced age and clumsiness. They're going to give me a mountain climbing merit badge if I just climb upstairs to the 50th floor of one of the skyscrapers here in town.
Well, if that doesn't violate the scouting code, it's all right with us. But I'm sure your story ends on a tragic note, or we never would have invited you to be here on the show. What's the element of heartbreak that you want to tell us about, Mr. Briscoe?
Well, the element of heartbreak is that I'm too weak from lack of food to climb to the 50th floor.
Uh-huh.
You see, I never won my merit badge in cooking, which explains why I can't fix anything for myself to eat. But also, I never won a merit badge in budget planning, which explains why I spent all my money on a room at the Plaza and don't have anything left over to go to a restaurant.
Well, yours is indeed a sad story, sir. But to ease your heartbreak, our generous Bob and Ray organization wants you to have this lovely gift, a set of genuine brass fireplace tools from Andy's House of Andirons in North Platte, Nebraska.
Well, I don't have any idea how to build a fire in a fireplace, so I sure don't need any tools like that.
Oh, don't try to thank us. That's the least we could do. And here's a lady now with a rather hard luck story, Mrs. Bonnie Lurchfield of Fort Kent, Maine. Ms. Lurchfield, I understand you spent your small life savings on a trip to New York to check into the circumstances surrounding your birth.
That's right. My mother always suspected that I'd been accidentally switched with another baby at the hospital right after I was born. I guess she wanted to deny I was hers because I did so poorly in school.
Well, I guess that could be part of it. Of course, you're rather a homely woman, too.
Yes. I guess I was a disappointment to Mom all the way around, but I always suspected that I really had been switched with another baby at the hospital in New York where I was born, so I just couldn't rest easy until I made the trip down here and checked the records to find out whether any other infants were born at the same place on the same day that I was.
Uh-huh. And were there any others?
Well, there was just one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So now, of course, I need your financial help to get to Los Angeles and make the Lakers pay me the $250,000 a year that's rightfully mine.
Well, we weren't planning to send you to the West Coast, Mrs. Lurchfield, but we do have another gift in mind I think is even better. Just for you, here is this fine electric hedge trimmer from the Delaware Clipper and Shears Company of Wilmington.
Well, I don't care whether my hedge gets trimmed or not. I have much more important matters to take care of.
Okay, use it in good health. And now, with today's final hard luck story, here's Mr. Tubby Lockhart of Niles, Michigan. I understand you're trying to get to Atlantic City, Mr. Lockhart, to take care of an urgent financial matter.
Well, yes. I'd say it's pretty urgent, all right. You see, I was playing Monopoly with some friends back home, and I landed on Boardwalk with two hotels.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who owned it tried to collect $4,000 from me, which I didn't have, and he wouldn't haggle about it or settle for less because he said I didn't have any alternative except to pay him. So I figured that if I went to the real Boardwalk in Atlantic City and stopped at two hotels, I probably could get by for less than $4,000, so I want to give it a try.
Well, I can almost see your reasoning, sir. You weren't playing Monopoly with real money, were
well,
you?
Well, yes and no. My friends were using play money, but they made me use the real thing. I guess that was because they thought I'd be gullible enough to do it, and they were right.
Yes, you do appear to be a complete fool, Mr. Lockhart.
Sure.
But to help you out, here's a lovely gift from our generous Bob and Ray organization. An auto air conditioner easily installed on any 1948 to 1952 DeSoto.
Well, I may not be the brightest guy in the world, but I know I haven't got an old DeSoto.
Oh, that's perfectly okay. We're glad you liked it. And now back to Ray at our main anchor desk.
And now let us join Mr. District Defender, champion of the weak and the helpless.
I am the city's district defender. It's my job to defend the weak and the helpless against those parasites of society who attempt to live off the honest labor of decent citizens. The con man, the grifter, the hoaxer, they're all around us, and their victims form an endless parade of human misery through the office of the district defender. There, high atop the old Van Brewster building, my latest heartbreaking case began.
Excuse me, are you Mr. District Defender?
Yes, and I assume that misfortune has brought you here because you're a weak and helpless victim of the con man, the grifter, the hoaxer.
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know what to make of my situation, Mr. District Defender. All I know is that I need your help in locating a dapper gentleman about 35. He has a carefully waxed mustache, and he's often seen carrying a little black bag full of negotiable securities.
Oh, how tragically familiar this all sounds. The carefully waxed mustache, the black bag filled with negotiable securities. If only decent citizens like yourself knew how to watch for these marks of the con man, the grifter, the hoaxer. But suppose you begin your sad story at the beginning.
Yeah, well, okay. To begin my story at the beginning, Mr. District Defender, I was sitting in the park about 2 weeks ago. And I've been out of work for almost a year. So when this dapper gentleman with the waxed mustache sat down next to me and said he'd give me a job paying $400 a week, I jumped at it.
In other words, you walked right into the trap he'd carefully set for you. But being a decent citizen yourself, you never suspected the motives of a stranger who'd promise a high-paying job to a chronic unemployable.
Well, actually, I'm not a chronic unemployable, Mr. District Defender. I have a Ph.D. in accounting. But I just couldn't find a job that would pay as much as $400 a week until this guy came along. He even paid me the first week's salary in advance, right there in the park. He said it was to seal the bargain, so I wouldn't go to work for anybody else.
I'm not surprised to hear that. The con man often gives his victims a small amount of cash in the beginning to win their confidence, as it were.
Well, he sure won mine, as it was.
Please don't think I'm criticizing you, sir. Most decent citizens turn out to be nothing more than gullible fools when they fall into the clutches of the con man and the grifter. I assume this evil person you met was running the old crooked employment agency dodge. When did he first mention that you'd have to pay his agency an enormous fee for getting you this job?
Well, he never mentioned that or anything about an employment agency. In fact, he gave me this engraved business card that said he worked for a bank.
Well, let me see that. T. Wayland Osborne, First Vice President, Avenue Bank Trust Company. That's typical. The con artist often gives his victims a fictitious name and business position to win their confidence. And, of course, it never occurred to you to wonder why any legitimate bank officer would want to hire a man like yourself, who's an accountant.
No, he just said something about wanting me to handle their books, and I just didn't question him anymore about it when he got off onto the subject of how I'd qualify for the bank stock option plan.
Of course, the old stock option gimmick. Did he ask you to put up any of your own money to show your good faith?
No.
I thought not. They seldom do it first. Go ahead with the story.
Well, to go on with my story, this man said it was too late for me to start work that day, so he suggested we meet at a restaurant for lunch. And he said he'd bring along some of the negotiable securities I'd be eligible for once I got into the bank stock option plan.
I suppose he brought those securities with him to lunch?
Yes, and they were all negotiable. I'd say about $500,000 worth.
I thought so. As a decent citizen, you wouldn't know this, but the con man often flashes negotiable securities in front of his victims. And there's no specific law he's violating, so I can't stop him.
Oh, gee, that's too bad. Well, anyway, it was the securities that proved to be my problem. You see, this man had to leave the restaurant before I did because he said he had an appointment.
That's often the way they do it.
Well, I guess so. Well, anyway, I didn't notice until he'd left that he'd forgotten to take his bag of negotiable securities with him. And then when I tried to return them, I discovered that his business card didn't have an address on it, just the name of the bank. Since I'm a stranger in town, I thought you could help me find him.
I'm sorry, sir, but I'm afraid it's too late for that now. You've been taken. But I hope this bitter experience will teach you a lesson and that you'll never again need the help of Mr. District Defender.
Whenever I see a windmill turning against a Holland sky so clear,
suddenly, I get a tremendous yearning for the special taste of Heineken beer. Of all imported beers, only one could be number one, and that one is the one and only Heineken.
There's a 300-year-old windmill in Holland that's dedicated to Van Munching of New York, exclusive importers of Heineken beer in the USA, and to all Americans who have made Heineken America's number one imported beer, Heineken beer. Brewed and bottled in Holland, light or dark in a green bottle or in draft, and that Heineken draft.
Heineken tastes tremendous.
No wonder it's number one.
In these days of inflation, the value of your dollar is on the rise at Two Guys, a store with the Dollar Days sale that features fabulously low prices on a wide variety of quality items. Spring is in the air, so it's about time to go to work on your garden. Start your outdoor work with a thrifty 33% saving on pruning shears. These 8-inch Anvil pruners are on sale for only $1 apiece. Get the most out of your green thumb with a 112-page book on vegetable gardening and canning. Complete guide is selling for only $1. For fresh, clean aquarium water, you'll need a 3-pound bag of filter carbon and an 8-ounce bag of polyester fiber. They're ideal for any type of filter and are selling at $1 each. Spring is the fashionable season, so now's the time for the ladies to add to their collection of earrings. Two Guys is offering assorted solid 14-carat gold earrings for only $3. Remember, you'll find fabulously low prices at the Two Guys Dollar Days sale. So do your shopping at the store where the value of your dollar is on the rise. That's Two Guys, naturally.
Here at 10 before 6, another traffic check with Fred Feldman.
Okay, your public traffic defender up here. Remember when I told you that getting a rush hour, an awful rush hour, it should probably be? Well, it really isn't. Actually, some areas are better than usual. Normally, heavy traffic can be expected on the Van Wyck Expressway northbound. Nothing to fret over. It's good if you're going down toward Kennedy Airport. Northern Boulevard, the Kew Gardens interchange and area is good right now. Grand Central Parkway, not bad at all. Better than usual from the area of the World's Fairgrounds going out toward Eastern Queens. There are some slow stretches, but you have done a lot worse than this. LIE, not too bad getting out into mid-Queens. If anything, a little better than usual. Inbound, the LIE is good. At the Midtown Tunnel, we're quite heavy getting out of town. That's nothing to be upset of. And inbound, the Midtown Tunnel is now good. That would be better than the 59th Street Bridge. It's payday. You might have a little extra bread. So use the Midtown Tunnel if you're in a hurry to get into town. Upper BQE, normally heavy going up toward Queens. 59th Street Bridge, pardon me, both levels are okay going outbound to Queens, which makes no sense at all. Again, that lower deck is quite heavy coming into the city. We might still have some pretty extensive delays going down that West Side Highway, getting off at 96th Street. I think Riverside Drive will still save you time. GW Bridge, expect a crowd, particularly coming from Jersey into New York. We'll be back with you just before 6. Hello.
Hello. Things are good here on the subways, trains, and at the airports. And here's the headline of the hour from the WOR newsroom. 4-alarm fire brought under control in Queens apartment building. Roger Skibinus will have details at 6 o'clock.
If you ever desired the luxury and performance of a European touring car, but... And now it's time for another story of drama and tense emotion, a tale well-designed to keep you in... anxiety. And here with us again to set the stage for our latest thriller is the noted lecturer and world traveler, Commander Neville Putney. Commander, I feel certain that you've reached into your amazing file and brought forth another tale well-designed to keep us all in... anxiety.
Yes, indeed, young man. Today's documented account deals with two young clerks employed by a bank.
Excuse me, Commander, but by clerks, do you mean clerks?
Yes, quite. However, in the mother country, we give the word its correct pronunciation. They were clerks. They worked in a bank clerks. As it were, their proper title has no bearing on this story. The fact of the matter is that their lives have been quite humdrum until one day when they suddenly found themselves brought face to face with anxiety. The two clerks in our hair-raising story were named Whitney Follow and Harlan Nittany. Shortly before closing time on a Friday, they were alone in the bank when it was held up. The robbers forced Whitney and Harlan into the vault, and then they locked the vault door and fled. After a few moments of contemplation, Whitney turned to his companion and spoke.
Harlan, I've been spending the past few moments in contemplation because
Yes, I suspected that's what you were doing, Whitney. You're so quiet, I said to myself, he must be in contemplation.
Very true, but please let me finish. What occurred to me was that we've been locked in this vault just at closing time on Friday. That means no one will be coming into the bank now until after the weekend. But our supply of oxygen can't last more than 24 hours.
I think I understand what you're trying to say, Whitney. In 24 hours, it'll only be Saturday, since this is Friday. At that time, we'll be out of oxygen, but there still won't be anyone coming into the bank to save us.
I'm afraid that's what it boils down to, Harlan. You just had the courage to come right out and say what I only inferred.
Well, I don't know that your statement could be called an inference, Whitney. It's, well, it was just a rather clumsy way of saying the same thing I said.
Please, Harlan, we've bickered for years about my clumsy way of putting things, but that all seems trivial now, and we know we have only a few hours to live.
Well, I'd never refer to correct use of the language as being trivial under any circumstances, but I admit that it doesn't seem too important when we're faced with imminent suffocation. So, in closing, just let me say that it's been good knowing you, even if you do butcher the language, Whitney.
Well, it's been good knowing you too, Harlan. I'd like to write a tribute to our friendship that someone would find when our bodies are discovered on Monday, but knowing how poorly I phrase things, I think I'll just skip the tribute and lie down here in the corner waiting for the end, which is now utterly and hopelessly inevitable.
How about that for a bit of a thriller, young man?
Well, gee, it really had me on the edge of my seat, Commander. It's just, too bad that Harlan didn't live long enough to criticize Whitney's grammar for saying the situation was utterly and hopelessly inevitable. I think that's a redundant statement.
Quite possibly. But, of course, you've just been guilty of making an incorrect assumption when you said that Harlan didn't live long enough to criticize Whitney. Actually, the two of them kicked down the door of the broom closet quite easily and made their escape.
What broom closet? You said they were locked in the back vault.
Well, it was dark, and naturally they presumed that's where the gunman had put them. They soon discovered their mistake, and getting out of the closet was relatively easy.
Well, Commander, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
I don't know why you say that, young man. A broom closet would naturally be easier to escape from than a vault, wouldn't it? The bank wouldn't bother locking up its floor wax as securely as the money.
Well, Commander, that's not the point I'm making, and you know it. I'm saying that you've just tried to palm off another one of those dumb stories.
Why, you insolent young pup, these tales are all documented accounts brought forth my amazing file. You'd better read your closing announcement before you find yourself in serious trouble.
Well, after that clinker, I think this whole show's in serious trouble, but I'll try to read this ridiculous copy anyway, if it will keep you quiet. Friends, be sure to join us next time when Commander Putney will again reach into his amazing file and bring forth a tale well designed to keep you in anxiety.
3 killed, 9 injured when 2 cable car gondolas crashed to earth at Vail, Colorado Ski Resort. The editor for the news at 6, Walter Troy Spencer. Roger Skibinus, reporting for Lyle Vann. Our next news at 6:30 with Lester Smith, right here over WOR. And right now, Bob and Ray.
Welcome you again to the popular Bob and Ray public service feature, Widen Your Horizons, the portion of our show where we help you acquire new skills for leading a fuller, happier life. Our subject today is how to operate a pair of bookends and to deliver the easy step-by-step instructions. We have with us Mr. Walden Briscoe of the New England Bedcaster and Bookend Company. I hadn't realized before that your firm makes bedcasters as well as bookends, Mr. Briscoe.
Incidentally, a lot of people have asked me if I'm any relation to the Colonel Briscoe, who was the commanding officer of Fort Knox, Kentucky, several years ago. No, I am not.
I see. I hope those people are listening.
However, most people who go out and buy a set of bedcasters already know what they're used for. And that's why I'm only assigned to lecture on bookends. A lot of buyers think they know how to use those, but then they get them home and well, everything seems to go haywire.
I can see how there would be an urgent need for your instructions. Why don't you go right ahead?
All right,
then.
Now to begin with, you start with your two bookends, one held loosely in each hand.
Excuse me just a minute, Mr. Briscoe. I've been in a number of homes where the people use only one bookend, and then they have their books propped up against a wall or a piece of furniture on the other end. So aren't you really demonstrating a pair of them just to sell more bookends?
No, the use of only one bookend in the method you describe.
Yeah.
Is considered very, very tacky.
And
it's a practice that certainly marks the householder as a penny-pinching cheapskate.
Well, now, don't start calling our listeners names. That's a label you're going to hang on personal friends, too?
Well, if the shoe fits, I'd suggest you wear it. Now, starting with your two bookends, as I suggested, you place them about a foot apart on a table or a desktop. Is it okay if I use your desk here for the demonstration sport?
Yeah, sure, go right ahead. I'm just making a list of friends with one bookend that I have to call to to offer apologize. Do whatever you don't want to do.
All right. Now, I placed the bookends about a foot apart, as you notice, and they can be moved either way, so they'll fit tight against the books once you put them in between there. Have you got some books I can borrow, Smiley?
You don't bring along any of your own equipment at all, then?
Well, we didn't have any books at the factory I could bring. All we've got in the directory over there is, parts supply directories and things like that. Mr. Hotchkiss, he uses that all the time. He wouldn't let it out of his sight. Now, are you going to loan me some books, or aren't you?
All right, well, here's a dictionary and a couple of almanacs and...
Okay, they'll have to do, I guess. Now, we stick these books between the bookends, and we push them together to hold the books upright, and then we let go.
Looks as if everything just slid across the desk and then fell on the floor when you let go there, Mr. Briscoe.
Well, that's because these books you gave me are too heavy.
What do you mean the books are too heavy? They're just ordinary books printed on ordinary paper, and your bookends were too flimsy to hold them.
Now, look, pal, let's not go blaming the bookends for all the trouble you just caused. See if you haven't got some lighter books, will you?
Well, we got a few paperbacks piled up here in the corner. I guess maybe they'd be lighter if you want to try them.
All right, that's better. Now, as before, I place the books between the bookends, and I bring everything together so the books will remain upright, right, and then let go.
Oh. Well, they just slid across the desk, and they all fell on the floor again.
It's funny this didn't happen when I tried at the plant using empty cigar boxes instead of books. Give me three or four empty cigar boxes, will you,
Well,
Shorty?
Why would any of our listeners want to put empty cigar boxes between their bookends?
How should I know? There's no accounting for people's tastes. Give me some empty cigar boxes and step on it, will
you? We don't have any empty cigar boxes here in the studio.
Well, now, that's just great. How do you expect me to work without the proper equipment?
Well, you should have come with...
Let me tell you something, Bright Eyes. I don't have to stand for this, you know? Goodbye. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to a lecture by Mr. Walden Briscoe on the subject of how to operate a pair of bookends, and we hope you'll join us soon when we'll have a chance to learn another valuable new skill in our next session of Widen Your Horizons. Our production staff is constantly on the lookout for people with unusual occupations, as any of you who are regular listeners know. And right now, they've sent two such individuals into our studio, and they're here at our microphones now.
Well, there's just one, really. This gentleman is with me, and I'm the only one you're supposed to interview. At least, that's what the young punk outside told me.
Okay, ma'am. Could I have your name, please?
My name is Lottie Crump, but I'm known professionally as Mrs. Wingate C. Bellingham, and I'd prefer you call me that.
All right. Well, now, just what is the unusual occupation you have, Mrs. Bellingham?
I'm a shill in the supermarket.
Well, I'm afraid I don't quite understand you there.
Well, I go into a supermarket wearing this mink coat and all of this jewelry, and the other women think I'm a society leader or something.
Mm-hmm.
When they see that I'm putting in my shopping cart, they naturally look in and pick up the same things I do.
Oh, they assume that a woman of your standing would only buy the best. Is that right?
That's right. Of course, I'm actually working for the management of the store.
Sure.
The stuff I put in my cart is really a lot of junk the store is trying to get rid of.
Well, is this all you do all day? Just walk around the store putting a lot of low-quality merchandise into your shopping cart?
Oh, my, no, no. I have to keep doing things to attract attention to myself.
Oh, well, for example?
Well, for example, I'll go up to one of the clerks and say, I do hope you carry number two cans of Stengel's Early June Peas. They're the only brand that my husband, Wingate C. Bellingham, the wealthy Wall Street tycoon, will eat.
Then I suppose the other women hear that and make a dash for Stengel's Early June Peas, huh?
Oh, land sakes, yes. They knock each other down to get to them. They get so worked up, they don't even notice that the cans fell off the truck, that they're all smashed and everything.
Uh-huh. Don't the other women ever suspect that you really do work for the store?
Well, they give me a fishy look sometimes when they see me sneaking in the side door and putting the stuff back on the shelves, but they never say anything.
What about this gentleman here with you? Is he your accomplice?
No, his name is Rudolph Zimmerman.
Nice to know you, Mr. Zimmerman. What do you do for a living?
I don't do nothing.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for this little chat, Mrs. Bellingham. Thanks for telling us about your unusual occupation.
Well, I've enjoyed being here, and... if you're in Philo T. Finney's Market on Lexington Avenue this week, don't buy the veal cutlets.
Don't, huh?
I'll be pushing them, but they're not so good.
All right, we'll remember that, and thanks again, and goodbye to both of you.
Streaming through the gate, here comes those brawny boys.
And right, as Stan says, they're wearing shorts. Tonight, Bob and Ray uniformed guard.
He jumped at the opportunity to wear something comfortable.
Real nice day, and they got right into the shorts. Well, let's see. Let's see who helped us this week.
Right. Our producer-director this week was Jim Murray, and our engineers included Herb Squire and Ed Beatty, Barney Beck, Jim Quotamine, and Art Pompain.
And now the uniformed guard is just about ready to lock the studio door for the weekend. So we'll say so long, with the promise to see you Monday at 4:15. Until then, this is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
Who comes there? The East! Bruce Cage! Hot Cage! And Old Will!
Ask
off for the cage! By the center!
Quick! Box! Goodbye, goodbye. I wish you all a last goodbye. Goodbye, goodbye. I wish you all a last goodbye.
And this is WOR New York, an RKO General Station.